Recording. All right.
Yes, sir.
Welcome everyone to the Rink Rat Report podcast. Joined today by Kevin Papetti. You've probably seen him on Twitter. You've probably seen him pick out some random afterthought NHL player and say, hey, maybe the Leafs should trade for this guy. And then they proceed to do so. I'm specifically talking about Ilya Labushkin. That was a complete snipe by you. Kevin, how are you doing today?
Doing well. Yeah. Hopefully it's going to be an exciting offseason. I mean, obviously a new general manager already, but we'll see if that continues, because right now I have no idea what they're going to do. Like, they could do anything. I obviously followed Calgary a little bit, but, you know, it just feels like they're now with the new general manager, anything could happen. So it should be exciting. Yeah. Should be good for these podcasts.
Yeah,
exactly,
for sure.
Exactly. Yeah. Every week you could probably guess doing something or another. We don't know what he's going to do, because, like, in Calgary, how many free agents really were dying to breaking down the door to go to Calgary versus now he's in Toronto. Who knows how he spends that money? Hopefully it's not on Kerfoot Hole.
I have a feeling it won't be, but on top of that, we almost had we spent so much time with Dubas. I'd say we spent so much time, but, like, you know, he was in the organization for so long. We kind of had a read for the players that he likes and, like, didn't like. So it was easier, I found, to, like, make those reads, but now it's Treleving. It's almost like anything goes. So it's going to be an interesting off season, but yeah, I don't know. You want to just get right into this thing then?
For sure. So let's get it right into it. There's obviously a bit of a crowded crease in Toronto. We saw two goalies start, and neither of them were named Matt Murray, but we have three goalies under team control for next year. Kevin, what do you think about what the Leafs are going to do, what direction they take with this goalie carousel they've got going on?
Yeah, I think Murray's the obvious guy to go, just because, you know, Samsonov, even though he's an RFA, it would be surprising, even if they move Samsonov, it would be surprising if they went in with Murray Wall. Like, I think if they moved him, they'd just go get another starter. Mm-hmm. So I think one way or another, one of Joseph Wall or Matt Murray's going. You know, for the right offer, I guess you'd consider trades for Wall. I guess you say that for any player, but, mm-hmm. you know, he does fit for rebuilding teams and contending teams with the cap hit. But I think Murray's really the obvious one. 1 year left. Mm-hmm. Clear up some cap space, use it for either defenseman or forward, and go from there. I mean, I think the league save percentage, I think, was .899 this year. So I think there's going to be a bit of a market for Murray, maybe not at his current cap hit, but I do think that there'll be a team that takes him, maybe if you retain a little bit, maybe if you throw in a little bit of an asset. But I think Wall, with his cap hit, the difference between Wall and Murray is about $4 million almost, and I think they'll want to use that $4 million elsewhere. That's my guess. I mean, right off for a Wall, who knows? But
absolutely. And, like, is there an amount that you'd be willing to part ways with, like, draft pick wise or prospect wise, to move Murray? And if so, like, do you have, like, that number in your head, or, like, what would, like, you said you mentioned retaining? What would be, like, the picks that you would move if it were to be a retain? Or do you think we'd be able to just push him out, maybe retain, I don't know, let's say 30% of his current deal? And you think a team would just take that on for nothing, like, for future considerations? Like, what's your angle on that?
Yeah, I think about $1 million, maybe a little bit more than $1 million retaining. That should be enough to get rid of him. You know, Mrazek had 2 years left last offseason. They moved him. So with Murray, I don't have, like, a – I think there's just so many teams that need goaltending. Like, Columbus was terrible. The Sharks were terrible. He does have a 10-team no trade. And when you're a goalie, I think that can actually be, like, a 20-team no trade. Like, you kind of know 10 teams that aren't going to trade for you. They just don't need goaltending.
Yeah.
So it might be tough that way. I guess worst case buyout, but I'd much rather them take the hit in year one, because year two, they have so many raises due. They have Matthews, Nylander, whether he's back, whether they replace him, that person's going to need a raise. Liljegren is going to need a raise. Then you have even small guy like TJ Brody, Bobby McMahon, Nick Robertson. Go down the list. There's a lot of raises coming the next year. The cap's going to go up, but I do think this is the year where you have some cap flexibility, and you'd rather take a little bit of a hit this year rather than $2 million next year. Because I think if you even took 1.5, I think you'd get rid of him. That's my guess. But
fair enough. It seems
see where it goes.
Yeah, we're all in agreement here. We're probably going to move Murray if of the goalies to get moved. And if that's the case, that means we're likely signing Samsonov and extending him on that RFA deal. Do you either of you guys have, like, a number that you would hit for Samsonov? Like, again, we don't know. Arbitration is, like, this big scary ghost. I never know what it's going to be. Like, we don't know what the number's going to be. It's so tough with goalies too, because it doesn't feel like there's that much of a track record for goalies. So Kevin, I'll start with you. Do you have like a specific number and term that you would want to see the Leafs sign Samsonov for?
It's going to be like, I think it all comes down to term in terms of the AAV. Like if you want to go short term, you go to arbitration, you'll probably get a bit lower, but just get mm-hmm. less years locked in.
Yeah,
I don't want to go too aggressive on any goalie, really. I'd be too nervous, but Billy Huso strikes me as a comparable because he had a very similar save percentage, very similar games played the year he extended. He was 3 by 4.75. So
yeah.
I think it's going to be more than 4 million unless you're going mm-hmm. 1 year, maybe. You know, three with the cap going up, maybe it's 3 by 5. I think it's going to be at least 4.5 unless it's 1 year. So, yeah. You know, whether it's 4.8 or 4.7, that'd be my guess as a comparable. But if you do go long term, you might be in the fives. If you go short term, you might be a little bit less if you go through ARB. But it depends when you want him to hit free agency, really.
That's true. And I mean, like when you look at comparables, I didn't have any before. Now you bring up Ville Husso is actually a great one there. I know was just cap dumped, but Cal Peterson, when he signed his contract at that time, that was a decent comparable in terms of not two seasons of not the biggest sample size, but some decent results here and there. And then just the wheels fell off the wagon. Another one I was thinking of was Samsonov's former teammate, Vitek Vanacek, obviously a little bit, what he would get a little bit more than what Vanacek got, which I think Vanacek was in the threes by 3 year there. So that's another one to consider. But I, the cap going up does, I think, will inch it up there in terms of the mid fours. If you keep the term short and you have Joseph Woles, the other goalie, I think that's totally manageable, though. Like, think about it, like 4.5, and then Joseph Woles makes 770. That's 5.3 or 5.25, whatever, between two goalies. That's not bad at all, right?
Yeah, it depends what you think of really both goalies. Like, if you think Joseph Woles is the next big thing, then I think you want to go short-term on Samsonov. But if you think Samsonov can repeat, like, that was probably a $6-plus million season he just had.
No.
Other than the playoffs. Mm-hmm. So maybe there's value at locking him up. I'm with goalies, I'm typically saying short-term, like 3 years or less. But maybe four if you take a discount, but I don't want to go.
You also don't have the best sample size with them, right? Too. So like in terms of good solid starter level play. So that is something to take in consideration there. I'm unfortunately very high on Joseph Woles. And I say unfortunately because, you know, it all could come crashing in, but I am always reassured Mike McKenna, his Joseph Woles' former goalie coach. And I believe he's on, Daily Faceoff, he's very, very high on Joseph Woles too. So
yeah,
that keeps me sane a little bit there. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do. I mean, what if they just like go rogue and like take away two of the goalies and bring in another guy and tandem him with one of the guys we have? That would be...
Yeah, I was just about to ask that question for you guys. There's like so many trade rumors surrounding Carter Hart, right? And like, do either of you guys see like a path where potentially Murray and Samsonov get dealt and at least bring in Carter Hart? Kevin?
I could see it for sure. Like if you think Hart's the better goalie, then, you know, I think Samsonov's trade value would be somewhat close to Carter Hart's. Maybe not fully there, but Samsonov's coming off a strong season. He's young, he's controllable. If you did think if you're very high on Carter Hart and maybe not, you think Samsonov is a fluke, then who knows? Obviously, like the more trades we're predicting here, the less likely. So I think the most likely option is Woles Samsonov would be most likely, but
yeah,
it wouldn't shock me at all if they decided to kind of sell high on Samsonov if they weren't fully convinced and go a different direction. So I just don't think it's going to be Murray Woles, basically. I think if Samsonov does leave, I think they'll bring in another goalie.
Yeah. Pretty good bet right there, I would say. So that's the goalie situation. Three under control, two under contract. You're probably only going to want two of them. Who do you want? I mean, obviously the younger goalie on a $700K contract. So that's the predicament there. I think, I mean, it's a big question mark to see what happens, who gets what, who gets dealt where, what they do with Matt Murray. But I think it's like a pretty simple kind of end goal in that one of them is going to be leaving most likely. And they're going to run back two of them. Pretty fair.
Yeah.
I don't think the three goalie thing can, I know it worked in Carolina, but
yeah,
just the amount you save from Murray trading him, it just makes sense to go to use that cap space elsewhere.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that is a good point. And like, it did kind of work, but like, it was an emergency basis. They did bring Kochetkov up and down. I know that the agents of the goalies would be absolutely fuming if they went three goalies, unless like someone came into camp injured, because goalies do not like having to go through like three cycles in order to get a start. So yeah, I think it'll be two of them. Let's move on to the defense here. An interesting predicament, I would say, simply because you got a good amount of defensemen locked up, but is that really the mix that you want to go into the season with? Kevin, what are your thoughts?
I think Brody, Riley, McCabe will likely be in the top four. And then I'm assuming Liljegren's back, unless there's some sort of great offer. Like if you can get a high-end center or something, or another really high-end right defenseman. I expect Giordano back on the left, so that's basically your left side set. And then they could really use just one stud right shot defenseman. I don't know if that player is out there and available. I think for years we kind of saw that, where the Leafs could use a high-end right shot defenseman, never got one. It's kind of the same situation, so I don't know if they're going to go kind of like on in the second tier, like a borderline top four guy. But they could definitely use someone there. They could definitely use a long-term solution for Brody if he doesn't return the following year, if he starts to age and it isn't quite his self. So I think an ideal world is a young stud right shot defenseman that they bring in. But again, I don't know if that player exists. I don't know if that player is available for the right price. So it might be more.
What do you mean? We had TJ Barry. We had Tyson Barry.
He's available. I bet you get him. They got a lot of right shot defensemen right now, Nashville, but. And obviously, like a defensive defenseman to pair with mm-hmm. Riley would be ideal. Like, they don't really need an offensive guy on the right side, as we learned with Barry. I think it's like, I don't think a Klingberg kind of makes sense. I think they got to go shut down.
Yeah, all the way there. Like you said, we've seen that mix before with Tyson Barry. It just did not work. But yeah, looking at the players that would get moved, in my opinion, from the team, I signaled out Timothy Liljegren, Connor Timmins, or TJ Brody. Just not that they will get moved, but like, I see them as guys who could potentially, like Brad Treliving could come in as this fresh set of eyes and say, like, I don't really like these guys. I would move them out. And more so TJ Brody just would be because he's signed for 1 year and we don't know if he's going to resign, plus the age factor that you mentioned. So I don't know if you could maybe get a first for TJ Brody, that might be worth it for me. But I also love TJ Brody's play. And on top of that, how do you replace TJ Brody, right? Like, it's easy to say we're going to trade these guys, but the other player like that we would get back, or the other player that we want to bring in, just doesn't really exist. So that kind of brings me to like the current pending UFAs. You mentioned a strong defensive defenseman to play with Morgan Riley. Is that Luke Shen for you? Do you think Luke Shen would be brought back by Brad Treliving? Or on top of that, do you see like Erik Gustafsson or Justin Hall being brought back on the team? Of the pending UFAs, I think it's probably fair to say Shen is the most likely, but do you think we'll sign any of them, if at all?
I think Shen's the one. I don't think Gustafsson's coming back, just because they have the three on the left side. He only played in two playoff games, so I just think as a player, if you're only getting that little, like he'll want more opportunity elsewhere. I think with Shen, the question is really, you know, is he taking a discount or is he going to get every dollar? Because after that playoff run, I wouldn't be surprised if he got 2-3 years, and I wouldn't be surprised if he was over two or even 2.5. Like, so is it like the cheap Luke Shen, where if he doesn't perform, you can move him as a seventh defenseman, or is he getting paid like number five money, right? So I think that's the big question. And then with Shen, because you have right now five of your top six kind of locked, you know, if you bring back Shen, so it'd be probably like the very similar pairings to what they ran in the playoffs, McCabe, Brody, Riley, Shen, Giordano, Liljegren. I don't know if that's elite. I think it'd be fine, but in an ideal world, you're kind of getting a younger player who's almost like more of a sure thing than Luke Shen. I think we saw a little bit of Shen, but I don't know if I trust him to repeat that or not. I take him back for the right price. It's just, I do wonder if Shen's back, if maybe you look at moving Liljegren for like the center version of Liljegren or a forward version of Liljegren, because they, or even upgrading at right shot defense by moving Liljegren, because I don't know if that's strong enough. I think it's maybe worth a shot. You see if Liljegren can take a top four role. You see if Luke Shen can repeat it, but I don't, I think Timmins could go because he might just be like a guy Dubas liked. I could see him even go to Pittsburgh. I don't think he'd command much, but I don't think Brody's going, just because I thought he was the best defenseman this year, at least in the regular season. I think they need two of him, and his contract's backloaded. So it's a pretty big, I think it's like 7 or 8 in the last year. So it's, I'm pretty confident he'll be back. It's just, I don't know if that player exists. I'd like a Noah Dobson or something, but unless you're moving a big piece, it's going to be tough to get that player.
Yeah, it's $7.5 million for this year, so I don't really think. But I mean, during the regular season, you're 100% correct. I think people kind of have that narrow mindedness where it's like, yeah, the last game of the playoffs, the last 2 games of the playoffs, 3 games of the playoffs, actually the Tampa series too, he stunk. Like, he wasn't very good. He wasn't able to move the puck. He also looked like the Tin Can Man and looked like all of his ribs were broken. So that's what I'm holding on to. I still think he's going to return to at least 90% of what we saw from him last year, which I'll take that. That's pretty good. Is it a number one defenseman? No, I wouldn't say so. But yeah, it's an interesting mix, especially on the right side. Like, I like Connor Timmins. I really like some of the stuff that we saw in a small sample size there, but you're really gambling if you're going Timmins and then Timothy Liljegren as your 2 and 3 right side guys there. So what would the move be? I mean, I was really hoping that it would kind of like convince myself, like brainwash myself from watching Timothy Liljegren at the World Championships and be like, man, this guy with that confidence, that just that slightly below competition level, he looked like a new defenseman out there. And I still saw some old bad habits, and I'm like, for F's sakes, damn it, Timothy. But yeah, it's it feels awkward, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I think with Liljegren, it's going to be like, are the training wheels coming off this year? Because if he's going to be a healthy scratch in the playoffs, I think you move him and you upgrade, because he's got some trade value. But if you're ready to kind of take, like, see what he can do the regular season, see if he can kind of take a bigger step. I mean, they need guys on the right side long term. So, I mean, he's kind of exactly what they need. And I don't think Timmins will be the 6th, though. I think Timmins will be the 7 if he starts the year. I think they'll at least get someone to – they got some cap space this offseason. So I think they're going to at least spend a little bit on the back end. It's just, can you get a guy for maybe 1 year, or can you get a guy good enough that he's worth it in future years? It's so tough for right shot defensemen, just because – they're such a valuable commodity that you don't know what it's going to cost, if you're gonna have to overpay. I think the Brody deal, getting him for $5 million, was a steal.
Yeah. Solid, yeah. And so is there anyone that you would target at right D in free agency, or could you see like potentially Jake McCabe shifting over and us targeting a lefty maybe for at least this year? Anyone that you can point out in free agency? Or
I find like with free agent defensemen, it's just such a crapshoot in terms of what they get. Like, we saw with Goodbranson last year. We've seen with like what the Flyers paid for D'Angelo. Like, it can be anything, it seems. Like, at least with forwards, the points kind of dictate their price. With defensemen, it's all over. Like, Carson Soucy is a left shot defenseman, but he played with Giordano in Seattle. Like, he kind of makes sense to me. I just don't know. I think he'll probably get too much money. I think most guys will probably get too much money. I kind of wonder if the Flames would move someone, because they have like Uyghur, Schutzwright, Tanev, Anderson. Would they, like, obviously Trilling's coming from there. Would they move someone? It's so hard to find right shot defensemen. Like, I think in free agency, Severson's such a I haven't seen him enough lately to kind of get a read on him, but he's controversial for sure. Some people just can't stand him. I've never been a big Dumba fan. Like a guy like Mayfield could make sense, but again, like any of these guys I could see just getting a crazy contract. So I think you almost have to value shop. A guy I like is Dobson, but I just don't think he's going to be available. So it's a bit of a right shot D is always a bit of a mess and a bit unpredictable in terms of what they go for.
Yeah. And I mean, you have a new GM this year. Like, how does he value what you have right now? I mean, like, Tree Living could come in and be the number one Timothy Liljegren fan, and we could see him playing 22 minutes a night right off the bat. Or we could see Timothy Liljegren out before the end of August on a new team. Like, that's where also we have to kind of take that into consideration. How does the new GM view the team or value what the current team has, right? So, again, it's another tricky one. Like, this is you have kind of an idea of what the Leafs need to do this offseason, but it's like, when you dig into it, it's like, because like when you look at it, how many forwards are under contract or how many players are under contract for next season, right? So it's a big offseason, damn.
the right shot, like they need a top four guy too. I think they have the bottom, like I think Liljegren and Timmins can definitely compete for the third pairing role, but they kind of need someone to come out and play with Riley. The other player I think is Connor Murphy. The Bedard thing kind of complicates it. He's got like if kind of like a McCabe deal where it's like a little bit of retention for 3 years would kind of make sense. But with Bedard, I don't know if they're changing their plans, if they want to be a little bit better, a little bit sooner. And I don't know how much they'd be willing to retain on Murphy because I don't know if I really want him at the full price. At least no. I wouldn't give up much for him at that price. So all over the map on right shot defenseman, but I do think they need someone on the right side. I know McCabe's played the left. I guess that I've seen him play the right. I don't know if I'd go in with that with all that much confidence, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. Especially in like a big opportunity too. Like that would have to be a day one training camp kind of thing that you really stick to for a good sample size too until he's comfortable, and it's not going to look good for a while. But is that the path you really want to go? Is that going to maximize his value? You know, it's a big humming and hotter. That's all I can say on that one. But yeah, in terms of free agents, I'm trying to think like would be available. You mentioned Scott Mayfield. I'm not a huge fan of Scott Mayfield. I just find he can't move the puck that well. Like he'd be great for playing for the Florida Panthers in the second and third round, where just cross-check the hell out of everyone in front of the net. But during the regular season, I think that gets called all day, right? So
Gudas is available. Then you mentioned that.
Yeah.
I could at least somewhat see it. Like Zadorov is another one because Zadorov's just on a 1 year deal, but he's kind of high. He's close to $4 million, but just 1 year and they kind of have the space for a year.
Why not? Like if you're going to do it, this is the year to take a stab at one of those guys, right? So,
yeah. Michael Stone.
It wouldn't shock, like the amount of times he's been there, it wouldn't shock me if he did the 7 instead of Timmins or something like that.
Yeah.
What's it now? Like 4 contracts with Tree Living now?
Crazy. Yeah, if it happens again, we're gonna have to look into it because it's a little bit weird at this point.
Yeah,
exactly.
All right, I'm gonna push us along here from the defenseman and move us over to the forwards. And I mean, we can't mention the forwards without the elephant in the room. Obviously, the priority for the offseason is to extend number 88 and extend number 34. You want to extend Austin Matthews, you want to extend William Nylander, and you want to keep them around for as long as possible. But with that out of the way, assuming that we're able to do that, because if we're not able to do that, that just opens up a whole can of worms. Let's just operate today under the assumption that those deals are going to get done. I think there's a couple question marks on our roster. Even though we only have 6 forwards signed right now, there's a couple question marks on where guys will play. And the first one being with Matthew Knies. We obviously saw him put together a fantastic campaign in the playoffs. looked great. He looked like he fit, and including those three games in the regular season, he looks like he's going to be a regular NHLer. But do you expect him to be a regular NHLer? And for fun, I didn't put this on the sheet, so I'm going to put you on the spot here. But what's your over under on the amount of games that he'll play if you were to set the over under for that?
Like, probably 70. Probably
70. Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. Yeah,
I think he'll be full NHLer. It's just you're almost debating like injuries and.
Yeah, injury clause. Yeah. We'll put an injury clause on it, but
70, 72.
I think the more interesting over-under in terms of games is going to be Nick Robertson.
That's the one I was injuries, getting to next.
Yeah, injuries and what does the current front office value in him? Is he going to be a day one-er? Like, that'll be an interesting one. What do you think about that one?
I think it's tough to trade him now just because his trade value is probably at an all-time low. I would make him a day one-er and then just see what he does with the opportunity. Like, even if you don't like him, maybe you can pump his value up before you move him. And then, you know, who knows, maybe he impresses. Maybe, like, he can definitely shoot the puck if he's in the right – if you set him up, he's going to take advantage. So I think just – I have lower expectations for him. Like, just hopefully he can stay healthy. I think that's goal one. Mm-hmm. Over under on games, 50 maybe, because you know he's struggled to stay healthy, and who knows, like I could actually see him being a healthy scratch at times, whereas I think Nyes is now at the point where I'd be pretty surprised if he has a healthy scratch more than once or twice just to learn a lesson. I think they'll want to get him reps, and then Robertson is more of a trial type of player still. Don't know if he was amazing when he was in the lineup, and obviously he's had a hard time staying in the lineup.
Yeah, so I guess Nyes, you think he'd start out as like a middle six forward? You think he's going to just be vaulted to the top line right away? What are your thoughts on him? And then Robertson, you mentioned you want him to start on the roster. Is that in like a fourth line role, or where's like the spots you put those two rookies in? I guess Robertson's not a rookie anymore, but young guys in.
Yeah, I think Nyes will be top six would be my guess to start with Yarncrook. But again, like without knowing what else they do, it's tough. But without knowing the centers, I think is the hardest.
Yeah.
Robertson or Nyes, I don't think would be ideal to like face top competition. I think slightly sheltered, slightly more offensive zone starts. So maybe Robertson's depending on who their centers are, like I don't think he'll be on the heavy defensive zone start line to start, but Robertson on the power play is pretty dangerous for sure. I think you get him a playmaker. I mean, we'll see what the wingers are. We'll see if Marner and Nylander are both back and then kind of go from there. I wouldn't mind starting them higher up in the lineup, giving them a chance, seeing what they can do. And then if one of them is not working out, maybe you move Kelly Yarncroke or something back up. But, you know, who knows? Like, we'll see what the roster looks like, who the centers are, and I guess go from there once they have that. It's just so unpredictable right now with the lack of centers.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
Also, the old reliables are most likely not going to be around anymore. Like, there's a good chance right now we don't see Kerfoot and Tavares Nylander, and there's a good chance we don't see Justin Hall back in the top four. So a lot of interesting moving parts going into next season, definitely. In terms of Robertson, I do agree. Like, the shot is fantastic. We unfortunately haven't seen a crazy development in certain other parts of the games in terms of, like, board battles and physicality is obviously a disadvantage to him. I mean, being only 5'9", probably a buck 60 if we're being honest there, but there definitely is qualities that can make him a dangerous offensive player. So why not give him good opportunities, as you said, early on in the season?
Absolutely. And if he can even be like 75% of his brother without the size, like that is a clear cut NHL NHL player, like, or 50% even still, like that's still a guy who can produce at the NHL level.
75% of 100 points.
Yeah, okay. I realize that, but you know what I was getting at there.
That's not bad. I'll take that, sure.
Moving on from there, kind of the last roster question, again, with only six forwards signed, is it's kind of like maybe been the elephant in the room since Keith gave that quote. I think it was maybe two-thirds of the way through the season talking about John Tavares and shifting him to the wing. So, Kevin, next year, do you think that John Tavares will be a center, will be a winger, or are we going to see flux with him? Like, what do you think will happen there?
Probably some flux. I would still say center just because right now it's really just Austin Matthews at center. Like, with O'Reilly, Achari, Kampf, even Kerfoot played some center. I didn't like Kelly Yarbrough at center, so I don't really know if that's an option. I would lean no. So I would think he starts at center. I've had issues with, like, his results at center this year were actually pretty strong, pretty consistent with other years. Just come playoff time, he hasn't really dominated his minutes. Like, against Tampa, the Matthews line did pretty well, but the middle six, mm-hmm. like, with Tavares, O'Reilly, you expect them to be up on, like, the Tampa's middle six, and they just didn't. And even against Florida, like, you'd expect them to win that match against Florida's middle six, and they just didn't. So I think eventually Tavares is probably going to move the wing. I would guess he's mostly center this year, just given the lack of options. But if you could go out and get two centers, that'd be ideal. Easier said than done. I think, unfortunately, the Leafs need centers and right-shot defensemen. They're the hardest positions to get, it seems. But I do wonder, like, I do think one way or another, they need someone who can play top competition come playoff time. Like, we saw O'Reilly do it. We saw David Kampf the year before. They need some sort of two-way center behind them either way that they could take those minutes. Because I don't see Tavares playing top lines. And sometimes you don't want Matthews in that matchup either, depending on who you're playing. Like, if it's Bergeron, he's back, or if it's a Barkov, like a Selke contender. I don't know if you want Matthews out there in those minutes. So it would be nice to get, like, a good two-way center one way or another, whether Tavares is at on the wing or at center. I'm just guessing more center than wing.
Yeah.
Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. Go ahead, Joe.
Obviously. Yeah. And, like, if they bring O'Reilly back, what contract are you comfortable with him signing? Max comfortable. Yeah.
I would try to go, like, a big 1 year deal just because they have the space. I don't know if he's going to take that.
It's a good idea.
Anything longer term, like, you got to kind of plan, like, what's going on with Nylander, what's going on with Brody. Because I think even if Brody walks, you need, like, a $5 million defenseman there to take his place. Mm-hmm. So it's just tough after this year where you have, you know, Matthews getting a raise. I think the real question there is, like, are you moving Nylander? Because if you're going to go cheaper on Nylander's spot, maybe O'Reilly makes more sense. I just, it's tough to commit any term to O'Reilly unless it's a huge hometown discount, because you need every penny you can get, it seems, once Matthews' extension kicks in and once you have to pay Nylander. So there's that 1 year between when, like, that first year Matthews signs and 1 year until Tavares is a free agent and takes less. So I it's that 1 year is going to be the tough one there.
Yeah, and so if O'Reilly signs, we're assuming that John Tavares will play more winger in that scenario, because I like the three centers that we rolled with in the playoffs, but the biggest issue, and I think it was covered by everyone, was just simply the lack of foot speed. Matthews, obviously, he's not slow, but he's not the most fleet of foot. That's not the biggest strength in his game. He can skate, but it's not his biggest strength. And then John Tavares and Ryan O'Reilly are obviously on the wrong side of 30 and are just going to probably be getting slower as they go on. And we know that John Tavares, that's arguably the weakest point of his game, is his skating ability. Other than that, he's been physically dominant, which is massive. But again, it's the speed. So I'm a little worried. Do you think, like, Tavares on the wing would be that the answer there with O'Reilly? Is that an option? And did you like when they played together when it was O'Reilly and Tavares? Is that like a – or would you split those two up? Like, how would you kind of structure the roster if that's the case? Because in my mind, when you build a roster, you kind of put pieces as you go, and Tavares and Ryan O'Reilly would be, like, the first pieces you put in for me after the top line.
I think it depends who your other center option is. Like, I kind of wanted to see Achari at center in the playoffs with Tavares on the wing, but
it's not a bad idea.
I just don't know who the center is going to be. And if you can get, like, a borderline top six center, then, like, you almost need two centers, like O'Reilly plus another one, in mm-hmm. order for mm-hmm. to move Tavares to the wing, because, you know, I don't want to see Kampf, Holmberg, or something like that as the two bottom six centers. I'd rather go Tavares as the third line center, or O'Reilly as the third line center, however you want to call it. Mm-hmm. But they do seem to need someone who can play top competition and take tough minutes. And then maybe Tavares becomes, like, a sheltered third line center. I think that's ideal if he sticks at center. Ideally wing, but because you need two centers to make that kind of justified, it's going to be hard to find two centers, I guess, that that are good enough to push him to the wing. But I think that's that would be the ultimate goal, is Tavares is a winger who can move to center if there's an injury.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, like, yeah, as you mentioned, it would be a second and a third line center. And obviously you want a quality third line center. Like, David Camp was a decent center, but he was closer to a fourth line center. You wouldn't want that sort of quality in the three hole. Do you think it's safe to assume that Holmberg kind of has the leg up, we'll call it, on the fourth line center position for next season?
Yeah. Yeah. I think you can get someone cheap too to kind of compete for that role with him.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he'll be the fourth line center. Like, it sounds like Camp might get a bit of a raise. Like, I'd be pretty hesitant to give him term at a higher number. I think it's Holmberg, and I think maybe they find someone to compete with him in training camp, and they see who wins the job. But you could always get a fourth line center at the deadline, so that's not the biggest concern if it doesn't work out. But I thought he was fine in his NHL minutes. I think he's ready for that. You know, if they have a iffy fourth line for the start of the season, it's okay. It's just, I think you need to kind of spend some resources to get at least one center, like whether it's a high-end third-line center or a low-end second-line center. I do think that there's a pretty big need there.
Yeah, it's ironic because the way this whole team started, or not team, but like this era started, was that we are stacked down the middle, and now it's gotten to the point where it's like we need centers bad. So I'm just going to quickly go rapid-fire here for re-signing UFAs. We touched on Ryan O'Reilly a bit. We touched on David Camp a bit. Give me yes or no, and if you want to give like a quick little splurge on why or why not, you can. You don't have to though. So obviously it sounds like Nolan Acciari is closer to a yes. Your thoughts on re-signing Nolan Acciari as a UFA?
Yeah, especially if it's 1 year. Like 1 year, because of that cap space, I'm in on a lot more players. Or they gotta be easy to move after a year where it's like no trade protection. So I like Acciari. I think he could actually be a fourth line center or move to the wing. So I'm in on Acciari, and it's nice to add a little bit of physicality for cheap, and a guy that can play center. So if it's like under $2 million, I think I'm in on Acciari. I think the term is the question there for me.
Okay, fair enough. And then next guy I got is Kerfoot.
I think he's probably going to get too much. Like, I take any player back at the right price. I just think I don't want him back at the same price, and I think he's going to get the same price. So, and I think he'll get term as well. Yeah, I think he'll get about 3.5. And I think he'll get term. Like, I think he's going to get a similar deal, maybe three by three or something.
Joe, would you take him at that or no?
3x3? No, I wouldn't say so, because he's he's a useful bottom six player, like can play the wing, like in a pinch, we'll call it, can play center. I would not call him center. Can kill penalties, cannot finish for the life of him, provides a little bit of speed in terms of, like, he was in Cam Charon's tracking data, he was pretty decent at transporting the puck up the ice. Unfortunately, he crossed the blue line and it was like a spell went over him and he didn't know where he was. But yeah, for that bottom six kind of value, I think three is too much. I would say closer to kind of what Evan Rodriguez got this year, like two-ish. Yeah. Be more comfortable.
I think he'll get more. I think he'll go over three, though. Like, I just don't think he'll be back for that reason. Right, if he's under three, I'd at least consider it. But that's the term, right? Like, I'd rather go a higher-end player and then try to replace Kerfoot with some sort of bargain signing. I think that's the play.
And on top of that, like, if you look at the free agents that are available for forwards, it feels like it's a thin year. Maybe I don't know. Maybe it's because we have so many holes to fill. That's why I'm feeling that. So, I could easily see him being pushed like to that three. A team will give him to him for sure. I mean, we just saw Athanasiou sign for like 2x4.5, whatever it was. So we've seen crazier deals out there. Moving on from Kerfoot, Zach Aston-Reese, would you guys bring him back on that League Min 1 year deal? Did you like him as a Leaf, or was he like a little too slow, Kevin?
He's fine, but I kind of want a little bit more offense.
Yeah.
Ideally, like, he's kind of a 13th forward, and I'd rather just get 13 forwards that you don't have any commitment to, right? Like, someone that you're not scared to just say, if it's not working, or we're going to wait on, we're going to put him in the minors. I would move on. I would try to find someone else. I didn't mind him, but I think you can do a little bit better there.
Joe?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, 894. Honestly, like, I know it's the shiny new, maybe it's the shiny new toy kind of syndrome, or the mystery box. A boat's a boat, but the mystery box could be anything. But, like, I would like to see Bobby McMahon get more of an opportunity versus Zach Aston-Reese, because we know what Zach Aston-Reese is. Bobby McMahon, although only 2 years younger, he's been a late bloomer, and he has shown some things that Bobby McMahon has shown some things that Zach Aston-Reese cannot do, that I would like to maybe see what he can do in that spot. So 890 would be rich, maybe 750, take a little bit off at 1 year.
That'd be like a day two signing for me, if that's the case. Like, if we like, we're looking day for someone, three. We need someone to fill a hole, day three even. Yeah. So, all right, moving on to the last guy, save the best for last, Michael Bunting. Guys, what is he going to get, number one? Number two, would you bring him back at the number you're expecting him to get in free agency? Kevin, I'll start with you.
I think he's going to get like $5
million. I think that's fair.
Yeah.
I don't know, like, with the term. I don't think there's – I wouldn't bring him back. I'm not a big Bunting fan. I just don't think he's good enough two-way. Like, I never liked his defensive play. He's fine, just – I don't, as I said, like, they're right now, you just look at their winger situation. I think they have basically 7 out of 8 wingers, I would say, in their opening night lineup. 8 of 8 if Tavares moves to the wing. So I just don't see them spending money on the wing. I think they kind of replace him with Nyes, and he'll get his big payday elsewhere. I'm expecting him to get way too much money. Like, I don't think his next deal is going to be a good deal, is my guess. I'd be pretty scared of signing him if I was another team.
Yeah. Joe, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, like, the points drop from 63 to 49 from last year to this year. You mentioned the defensive game. I mean, after the first year when he was playing with Matthews and Marner, it seemed like, oh, like, yeah, his defensive numbers seemed pretty good, whatever. But, like, it became very, very obvious to me that there is a big deficiency in terms of the defensive game when he was put with Nylander and Tavares. Like, that's the issue with some of the numbers. Like, you have to remember – there's 5 guys on the ice. There are 5 other guys that are going to, or sorry, there's 5 total guys on the ice. There are 4 other guys that are going to also impact your defensive numbers, right? So when you switch from Matthews, Marner to Tavares, Nylander, those 2 guys that I think it was, they like to chase the puck more as opposed to play high in the offensive zone. So that's where it really killed them. And it really showed that, okay, maybe the defensive game is kind of lacking on him. In free agency, I'm going to go the opposite way. I don't think it's going to go as high as what people think. I mean, he does bring a little bit of peskiness, yes, but over the last 2 years was really from Matthews Marner. I think GMs are not as dumb as we think in terms of that.
I could see a GM, but I mean, like, listen, Frank Cervelli's not gospel, but like, he did his little whatever article it was of the Daily Faceoff staff, and they mentioned 5, I think it was 5x5 for Michael Bunting, and it was like 750 less than Bertuzzi. Yeah. And I mean, like, if you're a team that's in on Bertuzzi and you miss out on Bertuzzi, I mean, I think Michael Bunting is like for a GM that wants to make a splash, I think Bunting's like the perfect guy to do that for that GM. Again, like Kevin, like you said, I'm off on him. I would not recommend signing him. So, yeah, there's that. So, I guess we've established our UFAs that we would re-sign, and it's mostly just Achari and O'Reilly. But, I mean, we touched on the centers a little bit. Is there anyone on the trade market that you're looking at center-wise that the Leafs could be in on? I know Pierre-Luc Dubois has been talking about him wanting to be traded, but, I mean – the likelihood of him coming here might be low just because he's like a Habs fan growing up. Maybe he would just be like, F Toronto, I would never play there. But like, is there a player like Pierre-Luc Dubois, or do you think the Leafs should go after Pierre-Luc Dubois or someone like him?
I think they go down the list. So I think Dubois is probably the best one that gets moved. Yeah. I mean, I guess they could start with O'Reilly. Like, they probably already have a sense of what the cost is and if they want to do that. I'm guessing that O'Reilly's not back. And then with Dubois, I think the fit makes sense. Of course, like, I think if you're making that trade, he's got to come with an extension. But he's just a younger player, and you're kind of paying for all prime years, and you need a second-line center, if not this year, the next. Obviously, like, what I do think that you might get a bit of a deal on him just because everyone knows Winnipeg's going to trade him. I'm wondering if he would take a bit less, just considering he hasn't really been in his favorite spots so far in his career. But I guess the question is with him is like, is what's he signing for? Obviously, I think that's always the big one. But then, does he even want to play in Toronto?
Yeah.
So if you have that commitment, if he does want to play, I think it's a fit, just because they need a top six center eventually. And then you kind of go down the list, but the list kind of drops off pretty quickly. Like, especially the unrestricted free agents, like JT Compher, I don't mind him, but, you know, as a free agent center, those could be bidding words. I think Colorado could also use him back, so I wouldn't be surprised there. Like an Eric Halla, I know, as a free agent, but there's not too many exciting players at center in terms of free agents. So, and then even if you're going the trade route, you're probably looking at more of a third line center. Like, I really like Ryan McLeod, for example, as a third line center. But again, they don't have to trade him. So it's tough to kind of – centers and right shot defense, unfortunately, like, A, you don't know who's going to get moved, and B, if they do get moved, it could be a complete fortune. So I do think they'll kind of aim high and then kind of go down the list and find the best guy possible.
One name that I had kind of circled on my list for free agents was Evan Rodriguez, who, I mean, didn't have the best year in Colorado, because I think he did a lot more than he was asked of, especially considering all the injuries he had to deal, or sorry, the injuries that Colorado had to deal with, him playing in that elevated role. Is that someone you could see slide in as a center that might get you a little more excited than the other names you mentioned? Or
I've seen him mostly on the wing. Like, I like him on the wing for sure. I don't know about him at center, especially if it's going to be a role where you're expecting him to go up against top lines. Mm-hmm. There's a decent amount, I guess, from the trade route, like in the trade market. Like, a lot of guys, like, it depends on how much is being retained and do you need a third team to retain. Adam Henrique has 1 year left, and he played wing mostly this year. But Anaheim, I think, would retain or get a team to retain. They just have so many centers coming, especially if they want to play Zegras there. I'm guessing they're going to draft a center. I think you also, like, another guy I like cheap is Isaac Lundestrom, as like more of like a low end third line center, just to give him a shot. I think Peugeot and the Islanders, it's $5 million, it's a bit much, but
yeah,
you know, they just got Horvat, so they have too many centers now. Wenberg in Seattle, like, that's just 1 year, I think, so that could kind of make sense. Given the lease cap situation. But there's not like a ton of, I guess there never is, like, there's never a ton of top six centers just sitting out there. If you do move someone like Nylander, I think you're looking for a center, ideally, just because it's such an area of need for the Leafs, and it's just so hard to find a top six center.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, just I've been looking through the list. There are not many. I mean, like, do you consider Max Domi a center? I would not really. I think he's much, much better on the wing. Like, Ivan Barbashev is someone that people are going to bring up, but he just doesn't play center. He's another one.
You
mentioned
you also Adam need someone. Henry. You need someone against top competition too. That's the hard part. Like,
mm-hmm.
A guy like Domi or Barbashev, they're probably taking sheltered minutes. I think you want Tavares taking shelter minutes if he's at center. So it's a small group of players that can do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean,
for sure.
There was, you mentioned Adam Henrique. I just don't like the foot speed with him. His finishing ability is great, but I think he's more of a Troy Terry product, in my opinion. I think they would, if you're running Matthews, Tavares, Henrique up the middle, it's going to be a little too slow. But then again, like, what the hell is the other
option? He played wing too. I think Henrique was good in his prime. Yeah, just how close is he to his prime is, I guess, the question there. Maybe Wenberg, because Seattle has Beniers, they have Yanni Gord, they have Shane Wright coming.
That's a good point out.
Yeah,
he'd be okay for 1 year at his cap hit, but after that, I like Ryan McLeod. I just don't know if the Oilers will move him and for what.
I mean, yeah, mm-hmm. He's a great player.
I go Ryan's just the better player. And I think Lundestrom, I like Lundestrom, but it's not, he's not good enough to be like a sure thing. He's more of like a project, take a flyer on him, see what happens. I do think the Ducks have too many centers. Not that you can, like, obviously guys can play the wing. Seattle's one, and Edmonton with their cap situation, maybe you can get McLeod if you, and the Islanders too. The Islanders have, I think, too many centers, unless they're going to play Barzal on the wing again.
Yeah, you put together a couple of teams that I'm going to have to do homework on, kind of take a look at their center position, cap position, and see if we can pinpoint some potential trade targets for the Leafs here. Moving off from the centers, though, because I feel like we've kind of touched on everything we wanted to touch on there. Any wingers? I know you said our wingers are mostly filled out, but do you think there's any chance like maybe miss the boat on a couple good centers and in turn we take a stab at a winger? Like, I know trade-wise, again, I'm just going to bring up the biggest name, Alex DeBrincat. Like, we talked about guys to take one-year stabs at. Like, that is probably the best guy to take a stab at for 1 year, depending on the acquisition cost. But is there any like wingers that stick out to you, and would you take a stab at a guy like DeBrincat for that 1 year, again, depending on the price?
The Leafs are in a spot where they could, because even with his I think DeBrincat's going to go a place where he's going to sign an extension. So I think it probably won't be Toronto. But if it was just the 1 year, kind of makes sense. They could do the high cap it. I could see like a Corey Perry for the fourth line, as unpopular as that would be. Like, I could see that happening.
I love that.
I think there's a real chance Nylander's not back. Like, that's I think the big question for me. Like, it's going to be a little bit uncomfortable his next deal, where you might be paying him until he's like 35, 36. And I don't know if the Leafs want to do that necessarily. Like, we'll see what the price is. I think everyone has a walkaway point. Like, 8x10, people are probably saying no, but 8x9, less people say no, but some people say no. 8x8, more people are saying yes. But it really comes down to what's that going to cost. And if it's too high, I mean, True Living hasn't had too much of an issue paying guys into the mid-30s. He's been fine with that in the past, but he has an easier time getting free agents now and getting the
for people sure.
to take a discount. So the one guy I think is Nick Schmaltz in Arizona.
Yeah.
Just because the way his deal structured, I think he's getting paid close to $8 million in actual salary the last 3 years. He's pretty good. He's not as good as Nylander. He's actually like childhood friends with Nylander, so it'd be cool if they stayed together. But I think Schmaltz is going to get traded, is my guess, and it's just a matter of where. And a team like Toronto that has the resources to take him on, I think makes a lot of sense, because you get a pretty good discount on him just because of the way the deal is structured.
I mean, he makes 5.8 for the next 3 years. Yeah, for the next 3 years. I mean, pretty good player, like 58 points in 63 games this year, 59 points, 63 games last year. I think I wanted to say you were the guy who started the rumblings with him, and then Friedrich kind of jumped onto it, but I don't know if – is that right? I feel like I remember you being an early adopter of the Schmaltz trade train. If not, I'm still going to give you the credit.
Years ago. I thought they might buy him out like a couple of years ago, because he's coming off an injury, and it was the one-third buyout because he was so young. And his deal is like as backload as it could possibly be.
Yeah.
So with Arizona, even though he's such a good player, I love that line. Like, they're running – oh, Barrett Hayton's another option at center if Arizona moves him. I don't mind him. It'd be weird to get a Sue Greyhound now. It'd be kind of funny if they got him after all these years. He'd be a fine third line center, I think. I like Hayton. But they go – I think Clayton Keller is outstanding, and putting him with Schmaltz, whether it's Boyd at center or Hayton, I think that's an underrated line. I like Schmaltz. I don't like him as much as Nylander necessarily, but if Nylander is going to be at 8, 8.5, and Schmaltz is going to be under 6, you got to at least think about it. I do think if they're planning on moving Nylander, or there's a chance, if they're thinking of even keeping him and not re-signing him, then you might be able to take on a forward with term, knowing that Nylander will be off the books. So I think that's really the big question, is what's Nylander's asking price? Can you get a extension you like done, or are you going to have to look at other options? Because if you're looking at other options, like, all of a sudden, you need another top six winger, right? So the list of players, I think you need a transition player, because you need someone with Tavares. So I think it really – the floodgates kind of open up then, if depending on what you're doing with Nylander.
Yeah, fair enough. Joe, is there any wingers you target that you're looking at? Anyone you think of or brought up here?
I mean, like, Bry Guy Keller seemed pretty pissed off about the arena decision in Arizona there. So, and he even tweeted, he said, Clayton's not coming to training camp. Are you kidding me? He deleted it. So we'll see what happens there. Barrett Hayton's a really interesting one because last season, I think he had 40 points and like 32 of them came in the last 40 games of the season or something like that. He just turned it right on, which is great to see for a guy that's 2000 born. In terms of other trade cards, like, yeah, I think Arizona's a pretty good one. It's very, very funny to me that Kevin's got such a good pulse on all like the last place teams. It's like, yep, because you've watched them so much. I do not envy you at all.
I find like the top teams, like the Leafs aren't trading with Tampa. They're not trading with Boston. So I rule them out. And then Keller's a star. Like, I think Keller's
very good.
He's, I know people would be frustrated getting another smaller player, but that guy is like, that guy is a star. Schmaltz is not quite as good, but still a good player. Schmaltz could even, you could even try him at center, but again, I think you need a 1-2-way guy. So I don't know. Hayton's more of a 2-way guy. McLeod's more of a 2-way guy. Wenberg is kind of a 2-way guy. Peugeot is. There's options, I guess. It's just like, you're not, it's not like the free agent market's just loaded with them. So I do think they'll start with centers, and but I think the whole offseason starts with Nylander, basically, because really?
Yeah.
Really, that's going to dictate your term, like what you can do with any free agent forward.
And I was talking to Jason's brother about this in Calgary over, we were a couple beers deep on it, and I was saying, like, what's the value on him? Look at the comparables. Look at Philip Forsberg, what he signed for. Then there was a few others I can't quite remember. But the one thing to also keep in the back of your head, what happened during Nylander's post-entry-level contract discussions, we'll call it. He waited right up until the last minute to sign that thing. So, like, is he going to sign this offseason? Is he going to wait and see how much the cap goes up? I mean, this is a confident guy that likes to bet on himself. Does he love playing in Toronto enough to sign early? That's also something I'm not overly confident that he does, and it is worrisome.
I think they're going to try to find out. Like, it's basically like extend or you, I don't know if they can let him walk for nothing or not know. I think it's going to be, I think they're going to kind of force his hand this offseason and say, what's the price? We're either doing it or we're moving you. That's my guess. I think there's a decent chance he's traded, probably like 35%, like one in three.
I think that's fair.
Probably be back, but again, like he'll be, I think his extension starts at 28. He'll be 29 in year one of the playoffs. So if it's a 7-year deal, you know, you pay him until 36. It's not, there's going to be some iffy years there at the end. I think he'll probably age well, but, you know, it's a good time to trade him. Like, he's coming off, I think, 40 goals, a good playoffs. He's got value. Obviously, it'd be tough to replace him next year, and you're trying to win a cup next year, but I do think they'll at least explore the market and figure out, I mean, if he's going to ask for, like, $10 million a year or something, you almost have to move him.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And as we dig more and more into it, like it's an interesting offseason in Leafland, and what a time for Brad Tree Living to be walking into his new job, right?
I think it's like, I'm pro Nylander, obviously. Like I'm a fan of the player, but this isn't 23-year-old William Nylander now where there's no downside to his next contract. Like there's probably going to be some downside, but who knows? Like the Gavrikov signing today, you never know with maybe guys want less terms. They hit the market earlier. That would make more sense. The 7-8 years, I think, is where it gets uncomfortable depending on the dollar value.
Yeah, exactly. Jason, do you have any other like random forwards you're kind of hawking, we'll call it, on cap friendly?
No, not no one yet. I still got to do a deeper dive.
I like Barbashev. I like Barbashev, but I think that number is just going to be way too high. And again, he doesn't have the two-way game to justify a $6.5 million contract or whatever. So I think we'd be out on that. What do you guys think of Max Domi? That's an interesting one for me.
I feel like Dallas will want him back, if not Dallas, and like he likes Chicago. I don't know if he's really a center, the center they're looking for. I don't mind him as a player. It's just, I don't see it happening. I'd say it's low odds.
Yeah.
All right.
What about, before... this is an off the top, off the books one, last one, Andreas Athanasiou.
He signed for, today.
I don't think he's getting $3 million again.
Didn't he sign today?
Yeah,
he signed.
He just signed, yeah. He signed like literally 2 hours ago.
And he got more than three.
He got 4.7, I think.
He got a Chicago tax on that one.
Cap Friendly is not updated.
Yeah,
I feel so stupid.
I don't know. It's announced on Twitter. It's fine. I forced you to rush dinner to make this interview. before we head out here, I just want one question. We touched a lot on Nylander, and I just want to kind of extrapolate a little bit more from your brain on it. Is there, you mentioned like a short-term deal. What number could you see us signing Nylander at for the short term? What would the term be? And then what number are you, would be like the high end of most palatable to sign Nylander for a full 8 years?
The full eight is scary. I mean, it's the cap going up is going to be, it's hard to figure out on top of my head, the differences. Like I think they're going to be up in the 90s pretty quickly in terms of the cap. I think 8x8 is, for me, is even a bit uncomfortable, but with the cap going up, maybe that's fine. He's got a lot of good years left.
Yeah.
But I think the Nylander thing is almost you kind of have to be looking at both at once. Like, what's the trade offer? Like the best trade offer, and what's the lowest price you could get him at, and just weigh the two. Cause it's so difficult to figure out what he returned in a trade just cause it's 1 year of him. There's only so much teams to give up for a rental, but if you do maybe work out a some sort of sign and trade, maybe the value's higher. It's just, you know, if his price is through the roof, then there's not much value on those extra years. Right. So I think he's the most complicated one. I think they're fully committed to signing Matthews. I think the big question this offseason is Nylander. What's the price? What's the trade offers? What's the alternative? Like, I think Nick Schmaltz is probably the alternative. Nylander goes, I think you see Schmaltz there. That'd be my guess, just based on Schmaltz's contract structure. But I don't think you're just making that change. It's just, if you're getting a big offer for Nylander that makes sense and you don't like the price for the extension, you go from there. I think 8x8's even, like maybe 7x8 would be better. But it's going to be so hard to evaluate contracts for a bit because the cap skyrocketing, right? So
yeah, well, we're being told it is, right? We don't know for sure. You always got to be wary of.
A year from now, it will. A year hopefully. From now, it will.
I don't believe anything Gary Bettman says. As wild as that. It's like, you just never know, but.
Well, once escrow is paid off, then it's just like, it should be 50% of hockey related revenue. Once escrow is paid off, which it will be this year, there shouldn't be any, there's still always a little bit of leeway, but it'll jump. I think they're going to go up more than $1 million this year. That's my guess. But
I mean, for us, if we could get that, that'd be amazing. Like, that's just better for us. But yeah.
I think so. It makes no sense to go $1 million and then like $10 million. I think it's going to be like $3 and $5 or something.
Yeah,
but makes sense. It's hard to figure out what the cap's going to be. Pridham is well worth the money, I think, because he's probably got all the spreadsheets mapped out of all the different scenarios. So unfortunately, I haven't gone that deep down. It's tough to like know the comparables, but it is going to skyrocket, and then you know $8 million becomes the new $7 million type of thing.
That's true.
All right.
Any other thoughts, Jason?
I think that's it for me. Kevin, thanks again for coming on. Really appreciate it. Before we go, I'm just going to quickly plug your Twitter at K Papetti, spelled K, obviously, P-A-P-E-T-T-I. For those listening on audio, please go give him a follow. Good follow, great trade predictions, and just great coverage of the Leafs. One thing that we didn't get to touch on before we brought you in, and something I've been wanting to say to you, is that I really appreciate your sense of reason when it comes to the Maple Leafs, because it feels like there's a spectrum that Leafs fans are on, and it always feels like the conversations are between the two polar sides of the spectrums of either I love this team, don't touch anything, and I hate this team, but like trade everyone, too soft, that kind of thing. And I always find you're like the source of reason in the middle. So I just appreciate you as a voice on Leafs Twitter. So thanks for coming on. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. I'll have to talk Leafs soon. Hopefully there's some more playoff success in the near future, because I'm getting tired of all these first round exits. We're getting pretty good at that.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways,
we got an extra 5 games this year, right? So
yeah,
a little bit.
Anyways, thanks everyone for listening. Thanks, Kevin, for coming on.
Go Leafs, go.